Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. I hope these technical difficulties are over and you can hear me.
I can hear you. It's exciting.
Awesome, awesome. We have a guest today that's been with us many times, Jill Madsen. She's written several books about sound and healing, and we're going to discuss yet more secrets about coming into power and alignment with the universe. It's going to be an exciting, sweet, passionate, loving show.
Excuse me. I'm not laughing. I'm completely in agreement. Jill and I were just talking backstage, and I was like, rah, 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 rah. So that'll be really good. I'm looking forward
yes,
to
this. Yes, I was hearing that. I was hearing what was going on. You guys just couldn't hear me.
Okay.
Well, welcome, everybody, to Sound Health Options. As you can see from our computers and our announcements, we have some things back up, and I'm redesigning the website. Thank all of you that wrote in and said, hey, you like that new simple look? That's great. We're going to try to keep it that way. I just made a template because it was self-serving. Our media person quit for another job that we couldn't even begin to meet the salary or the benefits. So we're happy for her, but it all fell back on me. And I thought, how can I make this more simple for our radio people and get the message out? So I made a template, and we're just going to fill in things that way. And I don't have to work so hard. And if you like it, let us know. The link is there. soundhealthoptions.com radio blog talk, and we made the link live so you could listen, and they're also 347-850.
Uh-oh, Sherry, you're breaking up. Wow. Cats dancing in still wool. Up, oh, and she'll be back. All right, the adventure continues. Planets are moving in the sky. The sky story is exciting. It does feel like a melodrama, just in general. I will remind people that about 10 to 15 minutes after the show, if you want to find this, because this show, the Sunday show, is audio only, no WebEx. So you'll be able to go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Archive Player, and you'll find the show there in about 10 or 15 minutes. And or you'll be able to find it by going to either, I blacked out for a moment, about iTunes, or your podcast aggregator of choice, meaning something like Stitcher or Pocket Cast or Dog Catcher, or, you know, there's dozens of, you know, pick a caster that you like. You oftentimes on your phone, although Stitcher, you can be used on a computer as well. Well, so can Pocket Cast. And search for, in any of those platforms, search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll find our, I think we're above 560, 555 shows now, I believe, and you'll be able to find the show there. Those usually take about an hour or two after the show to get it rendered and up and posted. And you'll be able to find those there. Or you can always go to, this is another really good thing to do. This really is good for us in terms of ratings and tracking. If you go to blogtalkradio.com, sign up for a free account. They don't spam you. They don't do anything bad, or they never have to me in my many years with Blog Talk Radio. Done anything bad. And sign up for a free account there and search for Sherry Edwards and sign up. And you can follow the show or other shows that you'll find. There's about, I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands of hours they do at Blog Talk Radio, but you'll be able to search for other subjects and follow people there, and you'll get a notification with a description of the show and the time, and it's a good thing to support. And plus, then it moves us up in the ratings, which is always great. Are you back, Sherry?
I am. I just got a bunch of static, and
yeah,
somebody knocked me off, so I don't know what went on there, but you took over beautifully, so we're good. We're being sponsored today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and sound health, and we're going to talk about that a bit today and how it got started and what it means for you. Part of my announcement is going to fit into that in a second, because we're going to be sponsored specifically by our software, PreVac, and that's pre-vaccination factors. So there's a lot of controversy in our world today, a lot of controversy over vaccines that's really hurting people, and it's things you can't undo, or it seems like you can't undo. So what our goal is to collect enough data so that we can look at all of the kids and adults, too, who have been damaged, because there's a lot of HPV damage, and that's high school kids, so that we can create a program, and we think we have it, but we want to refine it, to create a program so people can be tested before they get vaccines, so that they can see if there's any problem. And right now we think it's quercetin, a biflavonoid, that is the problem, or at least the frequencies of biflavonoids. So there is so much controversy, incredible lies, and we've looked at a lot of them, and most of them are people who have some kind of financial benefit from vaccines, or they have some kind of political benefit. And I guess that's my announcement today, to please go to NVIC, National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. Now, don't go to .com, it's some kind of porno shop. But Barbara Lowe Fisher, who we've had on the show, we've tested, she tells the truth. So you can believe what she says there. The other is Sherry Tenpenny, who has come up from using Andrew Molden's work, and I think maybe many years ago, Richard, didn't we have him on the show? He's a doctor and a brain surgeon, or was, until he, in quotes, committed suicide.
Yeah.
And he proved absolutely, without any shadow of a doubt, that when you get a vaccine, that it causes microstrokes in the brain. And we had been saying that for years, but shortly after he discovered that and published it, he was found dead. He's a Canadian, committed suicide. None of his family think he has committed suicide. But if we look at this, it looks like Alzheimer's for young people, and that's one of the things we want to help prevent. So if any of you have something like this going on in your community, you want to be part of that, let us help you put a class together for your parents and provide them with the software where they can check their children. I believe that if you have to lie, cheat, steal, whatever, to get something to go through or to get people to believe it, then that's the number one indicator that they had some hidden agenda, and it wasn't really good in the first place. I want truth for all of us, but along with truth comes chaos. I'll talk a little bit more about that with our very favorite guest, Jill Madsen, right after Richard's announcements.
you can already tell from the backstage conversation Jill and I are having what I'm going to talk about. I have two things that just, you know, I'm going to continue to be in a bad mood about the effects that Trump's EPA is having on the environment. And it really is, I mean, these are really seriously, you know, I can't use any of those words, bad environmental effects that are occurring under this administration. The first one is the EPA delays toxic waste rule for coal-fired power plants. And the rationale for this, Scott Pruitt's Environmental Protection Agency is pushing back by 2 years key deadlines in the 2015 ruling limiting toxic water pollution from coal-fired power plants. Here's the thing. The EPA estimated that the industry would save between $27.5 million and $36.8 million over the two-year delay. That's the rationale. There's no, you know, evidently the, well, not evidently, obviously, there's a stronger word. The effects of industry making more money are more important than the amount of pollution that this administration cares about the effects of that pollution on long-term health effects, immune issues, total toxic load in the water, in the air. That's okay. That's all great. We give thumbs up to that because industry is saving.
Uh-oh. Now they've cut off Richard. Richard, we've lost your sound. I'll pick up on that a bit and tell you that every time Richard talks about something that Trump has done that he doesn't like, and most of you know that I was on the Trump side. Richard wasn't on the Hillary side. I don't know. He was on the independent side. But one of the things people are forgetting is this transition with the EPA and everything else is going on, that Trump is trying to return that right, that I don't know what the word is, to the states. And that's part of the transition we're in. So those of you who write to me every time I don't speak up for Trump or speak up for whoever's going on, I like a lot of what Trump's doing. Some of it I don't like. You know, they talk about immigration, and they forget to leave a lot of things out about it, and they only talk about he's against it, not that he's trying to get rid of something that was unconstitutional. So until Richard gets back on, maybe we can do his other announcements, which I do not have copies of. But Richard loves Mother Earth and the environment, and I think most of us do who really care about the people. But those who are into greed and power and getting their own way don't really care much about our trees and forests and skies and space and water and the EPA, and that's where Richard's heart is about all of this. I just don't know how to say everybody's entitled to their opinion. But when we talk about opinions and things that are going on, we need to bring up all the truth about it so that you as our audience can make up your own mind about what you can believe. And when we only bring up half a story, we're doing a disservice. Well, Richard must have really dropped into a deep hole, so I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jill. Jill, are you on with us? Jill is not on with us. I guess Richard has to push a button or something to allow her to come on. I don't know if I can get on Sound Health, if I can get on Blog Talk. Richard, if you can get even to your email or Skype, let me know what's going on there. The exciting news about all of this is that Jill Mattson, our guest, who's already written a book about what we do here at the center and then written another book, Lost Waves of Time, that I really, really love. And it made me cry. It brought back so many memories of what was going on. Okay, I am on the dashboard trying to help, let's go to the studio, trying to help Jill get in. And Jill and I are writing a new book. Jill,
can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Richard,
all right.
Are you back? Richard, are you back?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's not back, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jill. He will be back. I had to jump onto the site and come in as host or something, get Jill back, but she's back now, so we'll go with the transition. I met Jill many, many years ago. You know, we were at a big conference together, and she bopped up to my booth, I guess is what you'd call it, and it really was like a little elf, a little fairy, dancing up to the booth because she was so full of light and energy. And she said, "I'm going to write a book about you." And I said, "Well, that would be great." And I'd heard that story before, and I didn't really believe her, even though I loved her energy. She was like a little sprite. And so 2 or 3 months later, here comes a manuscript. And I'm like, this really is happening. And it was awesome. And I was embarrassed because it was about me. But I loved it. And it helped establish who we are as human bioacoustics. So thank you, Jill. Thank you for your book. Your energy.
I'm honored to do it. Thank you.
And most of all, the thing I want to thank you for is your ability to drop into the flow, the now, the place where we all go to meditate and to be part of the universe and to be part of all-knowing, all-God. So that's what we want to talk about today, those ancient techniques that used to have, and they called it your signature sound, your signature energy that was all part of the universe. And somehow we lost that. But the question is, where is it now and how did we lose it? But I've got to check in with Richard. Richard says he's back. Okay, Richard, what do I need to do? Just drop off?
No, I think we're okay. I've figured a way around that, so you can go ahead and stay in.
Okay, Jill. Richard, did you have other environmental announcements that you wanted to say before
No, thank you. No, I'm calmer now. No, I'll slow down now. Thank you.
Okay. So, Jill, what we lost, what did we know then in ancient times that we are not in touch with? Well, not very many people are in touch with. You certainly are from your writing. You certainly are in touch with that flow of ancient wisdom. So how did we lose?
The ancient people, in a big picture, they combined religion, and there are books showing that and studies showing that prayer works. And, of course, if you're going to be devoted and do a lot of chants and singing and always going into a state of gratitude, that's very beneficial. So the ancient people never separated religion from health and healing. So the god pantheons were just maybe like another octave of music that could be healing if used properly. And the other thing they never separated out was what they, let's say in the Egyptians, called magic. I think of magic now, and I think of, you know, in a bunny in the hat and someone who practices art of illusion and trickery. That was not what magic meant. Magic was using subtle energy. And when I first started studying this ancient stuff, I remember thinking, man, one of these guys smoking. I mean, they would say the craziest things, and I'm talking about, you know, 3000 BC. And they would just say absolutely crazy things. But as I progressed on my journey and as I learned also about bioacoustics, I realized that they were doing quantum energy. Particularly, one of the big things they were doing was quantum entanglement. They were they were using physics, of course they didn't have that word, but their rituals, their chants, their behaviors, they worked. It worked because it was quantum physics, and they were massing enough energy on a quantum level, and they would then see a change in matter. So their approach to health, what was your biggest and grandest beliefs for God? What was your devotion? What was your valor? And then they would dovetail that identically, like religion was an octave of music. They would dovetail that over, let's say, we'll call it alternative healing today, working kind of like magic, which was quantum, slow, natural healing. And then they would dovetail that with a physician who didn't have, you know, half the great tools that are physicians today, too. So one of the things they did was they didn't just isolate out a thread of this healing package. They used all kinds of threads so that they could heal someone with a combination of ways. And today, when we isolate each little piece out, we get lost. And some of the healing modalities, you know, they don't have the ability to do alternative health, to do natural health, to do quantum healing. And yet, sometimes that's the most effective root cause way to heal. And just one little thing before I stop my little soapbox here is that I've been very carefully correlating bioacoustics with some of these ancient traditions. And in bioacoustics, we use today's words. We use math words. We use, you know, words that Sherry made up when there wasn't a word. But you will find that the ancient elemental healism, their yin and yang balance, their religious traditions, so many of their techniques, like, for example, Tai Chi, Reiki, all these different kinds of healing modalities can be found in bioacoustics. Because bioacoustics takes a look at all your frequencies, and it looks for root causes, and it's looking at subtle energy. It's looking at natural sound patterns. It's looking at opposing balancing energy. It's looking at harmony and balance. And it has all, when you use the software, it has all kinds of, I suppose, proprietary algorithms, but it goes in there and it looks at all the imbalances in the body, and trust me, we all have a lot, and it looks for root causes, another thing that was very common in ancient traditions. So here's that for a big picture overview.
That's great. And in the ancients, and when I say ancients, I'm actually talking before we had big marble palaces and started having religious leaders wearing silk boxer shorts.
Mm-hmm.
We spent more time outdoors because we had no choice, and we often were barefoot, and we had much more of a relationship. We were much more in what I would call rapport with nature, because we had to live by nature.
Earliest music. If you look at the roots of music, let's go back 5,000 years to the Yellow Emperor, for example. All of his music is emulating the nightingale. It's emulating the reeds in the woods. They are recreating, imitating nature sounds, the Hindu religion. Their music is nothing but Ayurvedic medicine. And where did they get their Ayurvedic medicine and sound? From nature sound. So they're analyzing the rhythm patterns in a horse gait. They're doing the percussion from wind blowing in the trees. So they're using live instruments to reproduce what you hear in nature. And they're looking at, of course, bare feet, where you directly connect with the earth. So they create drum sounds. They create thunder, lightning. They connect you through music to the earth. They connect you they had a way of looking at geometry like at a plant, and their math was different than ours. So they had a way of building it, the shape with numbers, And they converted that to sound, and lo and behold, they could see your aura, for those who were clairvoyant, lighting up, which means grand, glorious healing going on. And then they would copy these sounds in nature. And so you have elements of music that are healing. You have pitches, you have intervals and songs, patterns, you have rhythms, you have harmonics, which is a naturally occurring ripple, and you have resonance going through harmonious tones. All this be replicated in live music and is also the backbone of bioacoustics. Exactly what bioacoustics is doing, it's looking at your voice and it's discovering rhythm patterns, harmonic patterns, pitches. It's like the whole enchilada, and then it gives you a little computerized report giving you perhaps the root notes of the problem. And why does that matter? Like, I remember when someone was first telling me, oh, well, you got to find the source, I thought, well, if you can fix it with sound, who cares, you know? Why do you want to take that step? And let's say you have someone who just got a divorce and he's terribly heartbroken. You can fix his, let's say, his physical problem with a sound, but if he's still in grief and mourning and anger and reaction to an emotional event, he keeps creating and igniting a new problem. So you can see it's very important to go to the source. And sound travels many ways in your body. So the computerized program is very effective. And the ancient people had different tools. They had their voice. They had musical instruments. They had herbs. They had natural healing plants. They had prayers. They had beliefs. They would analyze dreams or your subconscious mind. What are you hiding from yourself? They would do dances, rhythm patterns. They would use different rhythms to go to different sets of consciousness. And while you're in different types of consciousness, your body returns to homeostasis and resets. They would lay under the stars, and you literally get beneficial frequencies from that. There was a study in New Mexico where they had a garden, two gardens, and one of them just got the frequencies of the orbits of planets in our solar system. And they were like 40% better growth. I mean, there's just, I don't know if I'm going on too long, but nature and healing was one thing in ancient times. And bioacoustics is going at it, but we don't really know that. But they're using similar mathematics. It's just absolutely Today's version of it.
Absolutely. I want to start at a very small, gigantic space. You know, you hear about aboriginals and you've written about them. They do walkabouts, and the American Indians do vision quests, and even in Jean Auld's books, Clan of the Cave Bear, where she talks about this ancient history of healing, they talk about seeking other dimensions. Is other dimensions the path to God, like the Yellow Brick Road? What are we talking about here?
In ancient times, when they talk about other dimensions openly, for example, in the ancient Egyptian papyri, they say that we have a quantum entanglement, which means that, like, if we could represent ourselves as a roulette wheel and it was just had black, white, black, white, black, white, if you spun it on Earth, you can put your quantum entangled roulette wheel any place, Mars even, and it would spin and it would be the exact opposite. So for healing, the ancient Egyptians always had a tone in its reversal. So they were always going in for perhaps you in another dimension and healing that as well, assuming that you're all entangled. And the same thing with different gods. Different gods in the ancient Sumerian civilization, they were even called numbers. So there was the god of one. It was kind of like the sun god. Can you hear me? Am I on?
No, you're
Hello?
Here. There was scratchiness,
oh, okay.
So I just muted.
Oh, okay. All righty. So they had these gods of numbers, and they're using like a pantheon, like Sherry uses A, B, C, D, E to tune your body. And everything was like, how to put it, an octave, including other dimensions. And here's one way to think of dimensions. Just think of a piece of paper with a dot on it, one dimension. Two dots in a line, second dimension. Fold the paper into paper house, third dimension. Have time going on, fourth dimension, etc. So you see the pattern. It's like one is included in two as you go on up. And let's say you set fire to that house. Does what's going on in the third dimension affect the first dimension? Yeah. Does it affect the second dimension? Yeah. The third, the fourth, the fifth. So there's energy transferring between us in different dimensions. And the ancient people believed this. They didn't use those words. But I think to some extent that was their religion. They're going to altered states. They're doing out-of-body experiences, which were often triggered by tones and sounds. One last thing, and then I'll be quiet. But in the Kabbalah tradition, for example, there would be a group that would go to a different dimension. They would do a meditation, leave their bodies, and talk and convene and have the same experiences, share this out-of-body thing, and then come back. And the manner in which they did it was they chanted very precise rhythms and vowels and pitches. It was like a sound lock. And if they forgot the sound pitches, they often wouldn't come back to their body. There was a death rate associated with this practice. But they, as long as they used the proper sounds, they all went to some altered dimension that we don't know of or altered state and had a group experience and came back. I mean, wow. Yeah, they were very well aware of different dimensions, I believe. They didn't use those words. But in ancient times.
Well, and nowadays when people talk about, you know, ayahuasca, or, you know, that's a popular one in certain crowds, or, you know, any of the psychotropics, I mean, not necessarily the true chemistry like LSD or other hallucinogens. You grew up in a culture where you might do seasonal vision quests. Or the shaman in the village. You had the shaman in the village, which is which cinematically is always portrayed as some ragtag sort of, you know, one squinty-eyed, snaggle-toothed character, which could be true. I feel that way sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was somebody that you, when you were sick, you were taken to that person, and maybe they burned something and rubbed you with a hamster and, you know, did various what now we look at as weird things. But if you grew up with that as a culture, that was just a thing. That wasn't like, oh, my God, I'm going to Burning Man. I'm going to do this. This was just life. This is how you grew up. And you grew up in relationship.
And it was accompanied with a certain success rate. It went on in China, in Egypt, in Asia, in the Hawaiian Islands. It went on in Africa. It went on in the Americas. They're all doing somewhat similar thing for many thousand years. I think the thing is that it's quantum energy. It's subtle energy. You have to get a big enough dosage to make a difference. And there was no ER emergency room. So if you had a very severe accident and they couldn't stabilize you, it was pretty much curtains for you. And in fact, I remember the first time I read this, I was appalled. And later on, I was appalled because I understood it. But the ancient priesthood in Egypt had a practice where before anybody got medical treatment, which is a combination of magic, religion, and physician, or today, let's say, alternative prayer and regular medicine, before that occurred, the priest had to say yay or nay, like liver or hospice. And the reason why they did that was because their primary tool was natural healing and subtle energy. So it took some time. And, of course, they didn't have the computerized programs that we can enjoy, like through bioacoustics. They had their analysis and their healing, which was often their voice, music, or perhaps even a dance that made the same frequencies. They had their healing was all done by very skilled technicians. And of course, if you don't have a good technician, then your service isn't going to be as good.
And do you Oh, go ahead, Sherry.
Well, do you have a follow-up question, Richard? Because I'm going to go in a different direction.
Okay, let me. My thought is, I want to add to this conversation, and then I'll let you go, Sherry. That I also know, this has always been a part that's fascinated me, is I don't know what the time frame is, but there was also a long period of time, and even in some religious spaces, where they would have these rooms that...
Well, Richard's disappeared on us again. Are you still there, Jim?
Yes, I am. I am.
This is just really weird that we're getting knocked off. If somebody reading the description of the show was some kind of government agent or something, they'd think this was very non-interesting. It's incredibly interesting to the people who have touched these other dimensions, heard them, been a part of it, and it's an incredibly important part for our ancient history. But I don't understand. I've got knocked off again during all of this, and Richard and I have been talking behind the scenes. But in listening to your music, you show people how to go into those other dimensions, how to feel them. Can you describe what it's like to be there? And then I have an article for people that I want to share, and I said, I want to share. That's putting it back on me. He's giving me a message here that they knocked him off again. So it's different in that something that would be good for you to have and that I want you to have. And I think that's a big distinction someplace, and we'll talk about it later. But what are these other dimensions? How do we get there? How did you discover the music that gets you there?
I looked to ancient wisdom. In my book, In the Lost Ways of Time, I analyzed the music and what the music did to people. It's like, just like your tone boxes are prescriptive, everything you hear is prescriptive. It alters you in some little way. The question is how much dosage, consistent dosage, does you get? So in ancient times, there's no internet, no radio, no band. Any musician was controlled by the emperor or the priest or whatever, up until the Renaissance. So people could control the music. And by going backwards, it was very clear that the further back you go, the more clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient, perhaps even accessing regularly other dimensions, higher dimensions, than we do. And they had healing practices that they could sustain very long lives. Like many of these people, these old ones, were called the Shining Ones. You find them in many of the ancient histories, including the Bible. I think they're called the Giants in the Bible. And so these ancient people, at least everybody writes about them across the globe, as being perhaps not even human or luminous, if they were human, and accessing these other dimensions. And they were able to see, not even be geniuses, just simply see and experience how healing works. For example, I had an out-of-body journey. It just kind of happened, and I floated into what I believed was Atlantis, and I saw people teaching children how to sing the tones of their organs. And the kids all had toy spleens and liver and pancreases. And so they were learning where the organ was, what tone it was, if you're clairvoyant, what color it was, what rhythm it was, what emotion was stored in it. And they had long lost access to other dimensions to have more quantum information available to them. They were getting more isolated in our 3D world. And so they would hand down these customs, and they would teach the children this. And, of course, after a while, they forgot even the source. And then I came back and did deep wave body healing because I had that experience. I witnessed that, and I could do that. And so in many of these cases, like the flower of life, the different sacred geometries, the yantra, these are little patterns that some higher beings thousands of years ago could see that if, like, you look at this yantra, which is like a geometric design in the ancient Hindu tradition, they would say, if you spend a good part of your life simply looking at it, you ingest frequencies like you do with sound, and instead of maybe taking 800 lives to evolve, you only need one. And so many of the ancient traditions, whether or not they remember it coming from this higher set of beings, if you just look at them and learn their lingo and technique and kind of, you have to learn how they thought and felt saying, it's really easy to find access to all of these dimensions. And musically, because that was their prime tool, you just read ancient history with an open eye and open heart.
I have an audience question which fits in here because we're in the quantum field and everything fits in the quantum field. That's what I love about talking about quantum. Is out of body a place physically, or is it more like thinking about a movie?
I don't understand the question. Could you say that again?
Is out of body a place? Go ahead, Sherry.
I'll put it in other words. If you think about what you had for breakfast, it's just all there. But if you think about breakfast tomorrow, it's sort of a sequence. So these people are asking, is an out-of-body, when you say you went out-of-body, did you go to another place physically where you could pick up objects? Or was it like thinking at a movie about a movie you saw yesterday? It's in your mind, but it's not real.
I don't know if it's not real. I feel like, and this is certainly just my ideas, not proved, I feel like when that happens to me, I leave my body, and my body is in a, frozen state. And then I feel like I go someplace else in space and time, and I witness, I can smell the air, I can walk on the ground and feel my feet. So I have my five senses. And I have an expanded sense of clairaudience, and I can kind of like observe. I don't feel like they know I'm there. I just go back, and I have like a spark of consciousness. And people can, since it's theory, you know, you can say, well, maybe you're just crazy, maybe you did ayahuasca, whatever. But the truth of the matter is that many times I come back, it's a really incredibly cool idea. For example, that little out-of-body jaunt I have, which would certainly not be physically going back, but I had that experience and I came back with that knowledge. And now you want to tune your organs, I got a CD. And not only that, but I found in ancient China all of the ancient methods that they taught. So I put it in a meditation with the sounds, and then I had software create harmonics and root notes, and I taught what I observed. In a way, it's not physical, certainly not proven, but yet I still feel it's almost like cosmic cheating. I mean, you know, I'm getting these great ideas, and it's the same with music. Sometimes I just hear it, and I write it down, and then my name's on it, and I don't really quite feel right about that, but I don't really know what else to do. either. I don't know if that helps clarify.
It does somewhat. Now we have some follow-up questions to this. You said that you're there as an observer in this other place.
Yeah.
So you can't affect them, but you can feel and
mm-hmm.
pick up on the energy of what is going
mm-hmm.
on. People can do this with your music. One, will you repeat the specific music and how people can get it? And then I have an article I'd like to introduce people to.
Well, I have a CD called Contacting Angels and Musters, in which I actually teach how to communicate with consciousness out there. And it gives you frequencies. I've actually recorded and taped some of them, so you start to ingest them on silent tracks. There's music and talking on top. And I go through meditations and exercises in which you can actually commune and start to develop your senses. And I believe in Secret Sounds, our book that we've written here, there's also techniques where you can access other dimensions. In Paint Your Soul in Stardust, it's music that I feel inspired by. Maybe that's an acceptable word to describe this process. And I find it interesting because I do past life regressions on people. And if I'm playing like Stardust and I'm doing a past life regression on somebody, they always have a past life as a star being. If I do Paint Your Soul, it's usually similar. If I do Crystal Realms, it's like I'll do a past life regression on somebody and they'll come back with a story about being a fairy. It's really kind of odd. Whereas when I do the Healing Flower Symphonies, where I'm going in and taking out your pain and your sorrow that's stored in your body, then when I do a past life regression, people will come back with stories of past lives in which were very difficult, perhaps encountering the exact same energy. So in that regard, I think each one of my CDs takes you a different place. They all have sacred geometry in it, in tones, in the background. They all have ancient patterns. One of them has star tones. One of them has nature patterns, except one of them has flower frequencies. One of them has taped quantum crystal recordings. They all have ways that ancient man would have considered a sacred meditative journey, just right audible in the track. You probably won't notice it because I have it very slow pitches, small volume, just like the stars effect, but we're not aware of it because their volume is so low. I don't know. Does that help, Sherry?
Ah, it does. And they can get that at Jill's Wings of Light and also from Amazon and Barnes & Noble and lots of other things. But lots of information at Jill's Wings of Light.com. And a lot about Jill, and you can see all of her paintings and all the rest of the stuff that she does. If you would like to do this as an experiment on your own, we have on our site, soundhealthoptions.com, an article, and it's Reaching Theta for Optimal Self-Programming. And I write out this technique that I've just learned, I guess, by osmosis, because it's just always been there, of listening to this intrinsic sound, this body sound, in our ears. And it takes me to a different realm. I can't feel my body anymore unless somebody touches it. It's just gone, and I am mind. And it was very similar to a near-death experience that I had, where I'd fallen off this two-story balcony and hurt myself really bad. And there was an ancient lady there that told me and actually saw me and spoke to me and said, you don't belong here, you know, like, go away. So there are many ways to reach this other place. But one of the things that happens in this other place that is just not explainable to people who have never touched it is that you have such a peace and an understanding and a holistic view, like we are all cells in a body. And why would one cell in a body turn on itself and rot off of its own finger or something like that? So, one, is there any advice to somebody going into that state? Is there anything they need to watch out for? Is there anything they need to be fearful of? Is there any kind of protection? Or should they just go with the flow, Jill?
Well, in ancient traditions, when they talk about this, they use the words like opening up to psychic senses, or to, that's one word, or, you know, studying to be a shaman is another word for the same thing. They often prescribe not going too fast, because it when you open up to these other energies, if you go too fast, it can be very hard on you physically as well as emotionally and mentally. So asking for protection is a great idea. A prayer works. A prayer is very powerful, simply asking to be surrounded by white or for protection is an excellent idea. And then there's so many ways, like music is one, listening, and what you discovered upon has many names. And again, you're absolutely right about remembering it. The technique of listening to the sounds in your ears, you can find that in, particularly in ancient China. They would do that for hours. And it's kind of like you go into that altered state. When you first time you do it, you only want to do it for a little bit, but you want to keep it up so that you can extend that time. Me, myself, like, when I first started out, I was meditating, and that was the tool I used to be able to experience these things more easily. I found I could only meditate so long, and then, I don't know, my body just got all annoyed. It was very difficult for me. But as long as I stuck with it, then I was able to gradually increase, and I think I got much more flexible in terms of simply letting go of the body and letting the rest of me, the mind and the feelings, separate and feeling safe. You know, like my first couple journeys, they've always been beautiful, and I've had enough of them that I certainly have no fear. But I also took it slowly. Another great way is to do it through music. And again, it's slow. And your body is more conscious. This is another thing I've learned. Your body is just as intelligent as you are, if not far more. Your body has access to your unconscious mind. Your past is much more awareness than we could imagine. And the body, in my opinion only, releases endorphins when it wants more of something and makes you feel uncomfortable when it said, okay, whoa, that's enough for now. And when you listen to music, when you love it, keep listening, particularly if it makes you feel light and loving and joyful or whatever good thing you want. But after a long time of listen, then all of a sudden you don't like, the same music doesn't turn you on. Like I remember as a kid loving some popular tune, listening it to death, and that was it, to death. You know, then I couldn't stand it anymore. That's because it had done its work. I had gotten the frequency I need. If I listen anymore, I'm going to be sick by having too much of this particular set of patterns of tones. So just let your body guide you and listen. If it feels good, just keep it up. If it starts to feel bad, then it's, you know, set it aside for that day and try it again tomorrow. That would be what I'd suggest.
I have a couple of cautions, because I use this altered theta state which is on our soundhealthoptions.com under articles, no, in the news, under new articles. And you'll have to hunt around for it because since a week or so ago, somebody has scrambled our website, and I just noticed that part is still scrambled. So just hunt around for the link. It says reaching data. But there's two cautions, maybe three. One, I live in an area where there's a lot of high-frequency transformers, electric poles, and telephone networking things, and those big high towers. And if I get near one, I am just sucked in. So before I go into the state, I have to notice where those are and move out of the room, and usually my body just turns over and I'm looking at my body and I float out backwards up through the ceiling. And probably everybody has their own technique to, I don't know if it's a disjoint or whatever, but boy, I just waste my whole episode if I get near one of those transformers because I'm just stuck there like some kind of magnet. So watch that. And the other one is, if you're afraid of spiders, the next thing that's going to happen is there's a 6-foot spider, and you just have to say, take a bite or I'm going on, because what you fear comes up. The other is, there's not any logic for me, and maybe your description's totally different, but if I've got a wall in front of me and I need to get over it, maybe the way over it is backwards. So logic doesn't always make sense, dig under it, whatever. But the wonderful part of this, for me, is just like Jill says, you go out, you get into that flow, and you ask for an answer. And you can ask as you're going in. And you come back and you get all of this wonderful information. And it's much more than you could possibly cram into years of study in this life we call reality with tables and telephones. Any comment about that kind of thing, Jill?
Well, hats off to you for the telephone wire thing. The same would be for phone towers as well. So that's very true. Those are harmful signals in a host of ways. And, I agree with you 100%. And the thing about fear is that the reason why your fear comes up is because it's trying to pull out fear within your body, mind, soul. So the actual fear, if you're afraid of dragons and there's a dragon, that is not real. It's just the illusion that you carry within. And so the dragon's giving you a gift if you see something you fear, because you say, poof, all gone. Or have a mindset to say, okay, it's a toy dragon, it's a stuffed doll, and it will transform. There is no vision or image that you're not in charge of. So all you have to do is feel strong and speak strong. And then you start to do cathartic release, like you can do with music or other ways. And then the bit about, no logic applies. We can even take that a step further. It's like a training experience to learn to trust your feelings or your intuition. And they had that in the Egyptian priesthood. And many of the ancient mystery schools, even in, you see some of those things like with the Essenes and so forth, they would put you in a situation, and it would be a dire situation. They're kind of like making it up. It was fake reality. They set you up. And the only way out would be something that doesn't use your logic. Like, for example, they'd put you in a dark room, wouldn't say anything, and it's like you're stuck and you're going to starve there. But yet if you felt down on the walls to the floor, you'd see in one little corner there's a tunnel. And there is a way out. But who would think to do that unless you, A, start to release your fear, which is your own stuff, man-made, according to antiquity and ideas, and I would agree with that. So you start to release your fear, And then you just explore the world like it's fresh and new. And when you come back, it's like you've strengthened your intuition, and it's like you've passed a test. You've gone up another grade. And sometimes I feel when I overcome some of those hurdles, and it often takes me more than one try, but when I do, it's almost like more synchronicity happens to me. It's like I'm entrusted with more. Maybe myself on some level trusts me with more. I don't know how that goes.
And with a caution that when you come back and try to tell your closest people about this other place, they sometimes just look at you like you've lost a few of your marbles. Be cautious about sharing it. And it's like, be cautious about sharing your close encounters with the third kind or whatever. I think there's this incredible inner dimension that we can reach mm-hmm. to. And I mm-hmm. think there's an incredible outer dimension, like other space alien dimension. And well, I'll explain it this way. Used to be with telephones, it was one wire, one voice. Now they have fiber optic cables that they can change the frequencies inside that one wire so that it can carry thousands of voices. That's what we're tapping into. And that's what we hope for everyone, because to me, it brings peace. It brings attachment to all things. So we wish that for all of you. And Richard just informed me he's back now. He got knocked off again. You can't imagine. Well, you can. If you've ever met Jill Madsen, you can imagine, you can see the manifestation of that peace and connection. I'm not as open to share it with people except with information. She shares it with the joy of her paintings and her music and her workshops, and we encourage her. You tell them, Jill, how can they get in touch with everything that you do?
I have a sound healing school, Ancient Methods, at Jill's Wings of Light. And I believe at the moment there's about 7 courses. I'm doing some really cool ones, connecting with star beings and using mathematics, music, bioacoustics in your home, in your house, up at, fellowshipsofthespirit.org. And I believe they have webinars. It's in Lilydale, New York. But I just wanted to say one of the things that you said, Sherry, was really beautiful, and that is, when you feel this connectivity, it's kind of like you become one. And when you become one, this is for Richard here, you have this love for nature. Since I've started doing this, I easily communicate with plants and rocks. And they're all conscious. And the more we have this togetherness energy, the more we realize when we overlook someone or hurt someone, it truly is hurting ourselves. Not just karma or, you know, what goes around comes around, but you have a connectivity that blesses the earth and the nature and the soil. And ancient man really was into that. I believe they weren't as involved. They were even in tribes, and they had different ways of thinking. When you do these past life experiences and you go back to these cultures, I have done this, and it's like their reality is not ours. They don't have values like we do. For example, we might think right or wrong. They might think power or dead. Somebody comes and takes you over, they kill you, rape your wife, kill everybody you love. So they have a whole different set of thinking and values. This connectivity is kind of like kind of like going back to source. And I also, if one other thing is, if you think of raising frequencies, like an octave, you double the number of cycles per second. So you can have like 2 cycles per second, double it and get 4, or you could have 2,000 cycles per second, double it and go 4,000. So there's 1,998 more frequencies involved in doubling that higher octave. So as we become more connected, we're reaching, incorporating higher octaves. And when we go up or double, I mean, you might think it's no big deal. You know, you finally got maybe a new practice that's nice. But it really makes a difference in this world, because you get more powerful as you get into the higher light octaves when you connect. And then it's so clear that world peace becomes self-peace. And what you are is your biggest tool to influence your whole world, period. More people are changed by walking into your presence than by your actions, even. And that just becomes clear on the journey.
Well, and I think if we look at the, you know, the Buddha or the great the Dalai Lama, let's say the Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not a chatty guy.
No.
You know, it's by being in his presence, or Amici, or, you know, other. I've been in the presence of some other people who've spent their lives being in this altered, you know, in an altered, hopeful state, I guess I'll call it. And it's by their presence, just like you say. You know, I feel mm-hmm. this. I spend a lot of time watching the animal world because I care about the environment. I care about the environment because I care about animals, etc. And mm-hmm. so I watch wolf action a lot. And wolves are very much like, you know, they would never put up with the kind, or never, they'd be completely confused, and they would just disappear as far into the woods as possible until it all settles down. Because they would, we think of them as, you know, animals, and that's true. However, they would never do to the planet what we're doing to the planet as human beings. Because it would be like, you're killing where you live. How does this make sense? We're going to go hide until you guys figure this out. You know, it's just, it makes no sense to threaten the pack or mm-hmm. you know, to affect that quantum field. Why would you do mm-hmm. that? Why would you poo in your own, you know, whatever?
I think I do have an answer to that, and that's what my Lost Ways of Time book is all about. Because what I saw through the ages is that process happening over and over and over, and we're getting to more and more layers where we are an individual. Even as much as 1,000-some years back, people were still in pack mentality. Like with Pythagoras, they would talk about tribes, and they all think alike and look alike, act alike, because they were so tied in. And as this world changes, we become more of an individual, or at least we think so. And I really pondered over a lot. I was thinking, what are we all, what, billions of morons? What are we doing this for? This is crazy. And what I received as an answer was that by being an individual, we get the experience of what we do matters. We don't rely on the pack. We have to stand up and make our own choices, see the consequences, experience the consequences, and start to move and direct. And that as we are children of God and we are learning to be much more powerful, the lesson of perceiving we're separate, which we're not, but perceiving that we're separate gives us a tool that helps us in many future evolutions, and that we all agreed to do this because we're children of God growing up.
I certainly hope so. I like
yeah,
the idea
too.
That we're growing up, you know, that Mother Nature will take care of herself and we could be the fleas. So there is that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All right. As always, Jill, that was stupendously great. I knew it would be a fun romp. Anytime we jump into the quantum field, it's always going to be truly an amazing conversation. And once again, everybody, go to jillswingsoflight.com, one of the most amazing, most prolific artists I know. because she creates everything. I mean, she makes the music, she makes the CDs, she creates the art on the CDs. I mean, it's just, I'm still amazed you have time to have children. It's just an amazing, so prolific. That was excellent, and everybody have a great rest of the week, and thank you again so much, Jill.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye, everybody.
To have you with us.
Always.
And the honor's mine.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye.